get ready.
This is one of the most painful experiences of my life. They're promoting you.
Captain Riggs.
Captain Marshall.
To reload.
Think you can stay off the streets and out of trouble?
Yeah, absolutely.
And take aim. Because your number is up.
We never talked about marriage.
You want to get married?
You got the right to remain silent. You got the right to get an attorney. If you get Johnny Conklin, I'll kill you.
And welcome back to the Film Reelcast, where we are doing a film that I think is bloody marvellous. Bloody marvellous. And if you don't like it, you're a plick. Stu. Neil.
Call me a plick.
You plick.
Fantastic. I love it.
There we go.
James, how are you, my friend? Are you well?
I'm really good, thanks. Yeah. We're all good. How about you guys?
Tip top. Yeah, I've just watched Lethal Weapon 4 again, so it's all good.
I know, I watched it at the cinema. This is the only Lethal Weapon I was probably old enough to watch at the cinema when it came out. Because there was quite a gap between number three and number four, wasn't there?
There was six years between.
6 years.
Yeah, and a lot of wrinkles, I noticed, on Mel Gibson's forehead as well.
I know. A bigger bank account, though.
I tell you what, though, what did upset me a tiny bit, but I understand why they did it, is in all the posters, you got Mel Gibson's face, yeah, and then you have, Glover's face is a lot smaller. And I've always thought, because the way Lethal Weapon is, I know Mel Gibson arguably gets top billing, but in terms of the poster, they should be kind of like even, and it upset me straight away when I did see that poster. Just saying.
No, it should be. I mean, Mel Gibson got in excess of 20 million for this, and Danny Glover only got 7 million for this. So,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's strange, because they don't work without each other.
Yeah, Joe Pesci, and he got a million. He was a last-minute call, Joe Pesci, and Chris Rock was as well. So,
really?
Yeah, they were kind of like writing the script and changing it as they were filming this.
I mean, yeah, I guess we'll get into Chris Rock. He pretty much does. He plays Chris Rock in it.
Chris Rock is Chris Rock. It is. Weapon 4.
But it is better than Patsy Kensit's performance, let's say, other than her hair, of course.
And the scene in which she dies.
Yeah.
Yes. That cracked me. I told Mother half that. we had a laugh about that. That was the quote of the podcast.
Because Chris Rock, apparently, his character was originally written in as a gay cop. And then when they first started filming it, they realised this isn't working, so they changed the script to what it is. And like you said, Stu, Joe Pesci was only in it for did 3 weeks filming, and he got $1 million for it.
That is not bad.
It's insane, isn't it? But when you look at the budget of this, I mean, Lethal Weapon was $15 million, Lethal Weapon 2, the budget was $28 million, number 3 was $35 million, and this was a whacking $140 million. So a lot of that obviously went to Mel Gibson.
And I think, the first scene alone is probably the budget for Lethal Weapon 1, the final guy.
And all that's incredible.
What I liked about that is I looked at that and I thought, there's no way Keanu Reeves and John Wick 2 could deal with this other than these two, other than Mel and Glover. They're brilliant.
They're brilliant. You started bashing John Wick.
Straight away.
John Wick 2.
To the podcast.
Well, look, I'm an a-hole, but I'm predictable.
You're unrelenting.
Unrelenting, absolutely.
Deary me.
Neil, we should do John Wick 2 just to piss you off next week. if he can't make it.
Yeah. I won't be on the podcast next week. So James is using this as a moment of weakness to try and do a film. Bearing in mind he wanted to do Street Fighter.
I did do Street Fighter. What a film. What a performance. It was Raul Julia's birthday, I think, 9th of March recently. Obviously, he's not around anymore. It's our time. But yeah, so.
You've done Street Fighter, have you?
We have done Street Fighter. Yeah, no, yeah. Stu gave it 4.5 stars. I gave it 2.
It was a terrible film. It nearly ended podcasting.
It did nearly end the podcast, didn't it? It wasn't great. In hindsight, out the two, we probably should have done Mortal Kombat, which is equally bad, but a lot more watchable.
I actually enjoy Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. I mean, have you seen the trailer for the new one?
Yes. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm not talking shop, really. Does anybody know how to get HBO Max in the UK? Or can't we? Because that has a lot of films on, like Wonder Woman, I think, came on it. Maybe, I'm not sure. I know Godzilla versus King Kong will be on it, I think, in March, potentially. But I don't know if we can get it over here.
I don't know if you can, mate, to be honest.
No, I'm not too sure. The only way is looking on YouTube and finding someone who is particularly clever.
Yeah. I mean, because I really want to watch, because my daughter and I really want to watch the upcoming Godzilla King Kong one. So, but there we go. But we're not talking about it. We're talking about Lethal Weapon, I guess. So.
We are indeed. Shall I do a quick synopsis of this wonderful film?
Yes.
Go on.
Okay, combustible action franchise, a final installment. Detective Riggs and Murtaugh square off against Asian mobster Wang Sing Koo, who's up to his neck in slave trading and counterfeit currency. With the help of Leo Getz and Lee Butters, Riggs and Murtaugh aim to take down this crazy gang. And that's it. That is it. A simple plot. We don't need anything else. That is virtually the film. How much would you give it, guys? Good bits, bad bits.
mate, this is, I'll tell you now, mate, this is getting, for me, this is like 3.5, 4 stars straight out.
Out of 10?
Yeah, no, yeah. Well, out of 5, it's going to be getting, yeah, 10. Touche, Neil. I went into it thinking, because I watched a few other people's reviews on it, which I probably shouldn't do, like this, on the whole series as a whole, not each individual thing, and they're saying how it declined as it went along, you know? And we're saying, I wasn't here for 3, but I've watched, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, all of them.
What would you give 3?
What I give 3? I didn't like 3 as much as I like this one.
Why is that?
The main reason, and you're going to disagree, I think both of you might disagree with me on this, somewhat controversial. I thought the villain in this one was better than the villain in 3, the main villain, because of I think Jet Li, they did a really good job with Jet Li. Bearing in mind the compromise they probably would have had to make because it's Jet Li. And the fact that he didn't say much, everything, I think, made it a lot better. I don't think the villain in 3 is bad, but I think out of all of it, I think he's one of the weaker ones. I think the villain number 2 is really good, despite his crap, if you can forgive that crap South African accent. But yeah. There we go.
But this was Jet Li's kind of first American commercial picture.
Yes.
It was.
Yeah, so he wasn't particularly known, but no, I see what you mean. It's I can understand why you say that. I mean, you're wrong, but I can
I knew when you said very wrong. Yeah, I knew when you said I could understand. I thought, right, there's gonna be a but here in a minute.
That's what everyone says. But, yeah. I really appreciate your point of view, but you're wrong. It's a great question, but you're wrong.
I appreciate. I knew going into this podcast after watching that fourth film, I knew I'd probably be in the minority. I mean, even if we did a vote on Twitter, I would be in the minority. But I prefer this to number 3. I think this is at least the third best Lethal Weapon.
But no, I have to agree with you. Sickeningly, well, I don't agree with you as in the fact that I think he's a better villain, but I like the way, bearing in mind how bad Jet Li's English was, that I think the fact that he says nothing makes him a lot more menacing. And the fact, we'll talk about it later on as well, but when the scenes he's in earlier on, that he himself goes to the background and he's just there staring, looking at an overall picture of what's actually happening. And that's a lot more effective than if he tried to speak, because it wouldn't sound, it would have killed his acting, when all he is really is a martial artist.
Mm.
So whoever's idea that was. I mean, I didn't realise this again was a Richard Donner film. Shane Black is obviously back again, but I never knew Donner did 1 to 4. I had no idea.
No, me neither.
Well, I thought you would, James, because you're a huge Donner fan, aren't you?
Off kebabs, maybe, if you look at my waistline, but yeah. I do like Richard Donner. I mean, not, he doesn't do well. There are exceptions, but he generally does not really bad films, I think, when you look at, you know, all of them. They're generally quite good. Obviously, there'll be exceptions.
When you say all of them, I'm going to put you on the spot now. Apart from Superman and Lethal Weapon, what other ones has he done?
What other ones has he done?
Yeah.
Debbie Does Dallas. Didn't he do that? No, was that? Am I wrong?
I expected you to say Superman 2 or Superman 3 or something.
Well, it's debatable. Did he do Superman 2? Because he kind of got asked to leave from that, didn't he?
Yeah, he got shafted.
I mean, he's done conspiracy theory.
I love the fact you've quickly gone on to IMDb.
I fucking have, mate. Yeah, I'm not hiding that.
As you were saying, he generally doesn't do bad films. What are they?
What are they? No, I know for Frank. I mean, I know he did Scrooge, and that's one of my favourite Christmas films.
What, Bill Murray?
Yeah, Goonies.
Great.
What, Richard Donner done Goonies?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
And I don't need to look at Thingamajig for that, but I need to look at, he done The Toy. Didn't know that. Didn't know he done The Toy. The Omen, apparently, of course. The Omen. Yeah.
Apparently he was uncredited in Superman 2.
Yeah, because it changed direction, didn't it, halfway through? And then they had the Donner cut, which some people prefer. So,
I think thanks to IMDb, you've really redeemed yourself now, haven't you? Out of this.
To be honest, fair play. I knew he'd done the Goonies. I knew he'd done Scrooge, but they're the only two I could think of. And the problem is, they're probably two of his more famous ones. So I was trying to be clever and find another one which I didn't know. And unfortunately, my internet took too long to load to get away with it.
So I thought Spielberg done Goonies for some reason.
I
have no idea why.
He may have produced it, but I'm sure Donna did it. Because, I mean, I'm looking at the IMDb now, and yeah, Goonies is there. I'm sure of it.
No, I don't doubt you. I mean, if it's on IMDb, it's got to be true if it's on the internet. So.
Yes, especially, like Sarah's opinion on Facebook about something or... Well, that's always true, isn't it?
100%.
100%. No, not all Sarahs are wrong, but yeah.
So, Lethal Weapon 4. The start of this film, as you said earlier, Jay, is massive. It's really exciting. Do you think, out of the four films, this has got the best kind of introduction?
Yes and no, because I think you two are going to... I'm almost playing poker with you guys now. I really liked it, but I you could... argue that it almost gets in the bounds of slapstick comedy, because in this film the two actors are borderline, I don't think that they quite get there, playing caricatures of themselves from the first three films, if that makes any sense. I don't think it quite gets there, but you can definitely make an argument for it. I really enjoyed the first bit, brilliant, brings you straight into it, but
Sorry, I'm going to be your complete opposite, I think, tonight, James.
Good,
because it was just ridiculous. Who is this guy? Why has he got a flamethrower and a submachine gun? Why is he covered in armour? And why is he burning things in the pouring rain?
Yeah.
There's no explanation of who this guy is and why he's doing it. And why is two cops with nothing apart from crappy handguns?
You're breathing, James.
Cut him.
You're heavy breathing, are you?
Yeah, I'm sorry, mate. Yeah, I'm not masturbating related to Neil's voice, as nice as it is. I literally come out of the shower and I did my yoga, but had a shower and then I had to run to the phone because I said 10 past, it was 9 past, and I'm still recovering because of my waistline.
Are you naked? So,
no, I've got black and white Star Wars pajamas on and a white t-shirt.
Was it hot yoga?
It was hot. Yeah, 29 minutes, and I burnt 497 calories.
Lovely. Well done, you.
Can you record it for me next time?
I can. It basically sounds like me trying to have sex with an elephant. Basically, me doing yoga downstairs. Except
I've seen that on the internet. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Cheers. It's not good. It's not good. So.
Yeah, I lost all complete track of where we were going.
Neil was saying how bad the intro is, isn't it? It is hard to argue.
It just doesn't. It's like every one of the first three, the opening sequence leads on to what the film's about.
Yeah.
Yes.
In a sense that. There's a point to it. This one just doesn't have a point to it, apart from the running joke that Riggs takes the piss out of Murtagh by making him take all his clothes off and dance around like a chicken.
Yeah, it really doesn't make sense. I mean, as usual, everyone, we'll be doing spoilers on this, so if you haven't seen it, we're going to rip this film to bits. But
yeah.
As you say, it doesn't make any sense. Of this guy's not robbing a bank. He's not stealing anything. He's just walking down the street with a metal suit. And it looks really good. And when I first saw this, I remember thinking, wow, it's really original. It reminded me of, I can't remember what the film's called, but there's a film where some kid's just had enough and he makes like a suit of armour, puts loads of like machine guns and different weapons on there and walks down a normal high street and just starts shooting random people until he runs out of ammunition. I can't remember what it's called now, but it's quite a good film. And it reminded me of this, but there was no reason, as you say, why this guy is just causing absolute mayhem. It would be nice if, even if they said, oh, it's so-and-so who's lost the plot, and we said he'd do it one day, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it was just nonsensical. The whole time, they're getting shot at by a machine gun and a flamethrower, and these cop cars keep turning up. It's pissing down. I mean, it's absolute torrential rain, yet everything's still on fire. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. I didn't get it. And then he agrees to take all his clothes off and run around in his pants, which you can blatantly tell that he's got swimming shorts underneath his pants.
Yeah, I know.
It was just bollocks.
It was nonsense. Yeah, I was looking for a little bit of kind of a nubbin because it was obviously raining, but you didn't see anything. But it was weird. And also, they crouch behind the car. And he says, you go and I'll cover. No, you go, I'll cover. And he says, no, I've got a family. I wanted to tell you, Lorna's pregnant. It was such a bad way of saying that Lorna, Renny Russo, is in this as well, is pregnant. Because their relationship is a really close one. And they're in love. So there's no reason why she'd hold anything back like this. It was a really poor way of delivering that, I thought. I don't know what you guys thought. It was such a shit way for me.
Yeah, I've actually, it was. I mean, going through a previous one, I've Googled what's with the fire guy from Lethal Weapon 4. And from WarnerBrothersFandom.com, it says, the man with a flamethrower is a minor antagonist. He's got weapons, his firearm, flamethrower, goal. It's got a goal here. And it was to terrorize and set streets of LA on fire. So there we go.
I like the way he died, that they shot his jetpack.
Oh, yeah.
Flies into that big oil or a petrol tanker, and he just blows up, and they cause yet again absolute mayhem and thousands of pounds worth of damage. That was a really good stunt.
I know. I think the whole thing was really good. It's hard for me to defend, like what Neil and you are saying. I know Neil brought it up about the fact that it's not relevant to the plot. And in the first three films, we have had something, a bit of craziness in the beginning, which does become relevant to the plot. And that, realizing that, it is a bit of a shame. And you're right about the way, oh no, Renny Russo is pregnant, etc. That's a bit of a weird way to find out.
Says about his daughter's pregnant as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, but he knows that. He knows his daughter's pregnant, I think.
Yeah, he just doesn't know that who their dad is, that's all.
Yeah. But he still doesn't know 9 months later as well, which is a bit dodgy, isn't it?
Well, there's a timeline problem, which I'll mention later on, that they've really fucked the timeline up in this. But I mean, the next scene, it annoys me as well, and it's what me and Neil spoke about last week. They're on the... finally, Murtaugh's boat again, you see it in water, but it's moving this time. And they're out on the boat, and Leo's with them, one of the very few scenes. And they're still treating him like a complete idiot. And it's boring. It's sad now. It's bullying. They don't need to do it.
No. It comes into it later, doesn't it? At the very end. And
it does.
You hear this bit about why he's there. But it is, I'm not being funny. No one's going to take that amount of abuse. You know, he's had 3 films worth. So God knows how many years of just being bullied by these two idiots. You know,
and even he admits later on, Mel Gibson admits, we've never been nice to you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Jay, what's your thoughts on that? Or do you think it's good? Because I know you admitted to being a bully years ago, didn't you?
Well, you say that. I've got a tear. I've just realised I'm Leo in the film real cast.
I didn't want to say that.
So that makes exactly you rigged, what he's going
you. For. You were lucky I didn't do the intros to this podcast.
It didn't bother me, though. I just thought they kind of left off where they went on. And if you didn't have this at the beginning, and the whole way through Lethal Weapon 4, you wouldn't have had that really nice scene, and it's probably Leo's best scene in the whole of the series in terms of emotional impact, let's say.
Emotional impact.
Yeah. Tear in my eye.
Which one? The one between your legs.
So it was really good. It was. I didn't have a problem at all. It was back where we were, and they're teasing him, but he loves it. He loves it as well. At the same point, it doesn't really.
He hasn't got any other friends. He admits that.
Yeah. It is quite sad that he comes out with the shit he does later on in the film, and it's sort of. But it's a thing just to tie everything together. But we'll get to that bit, won't we?
Yeah.
This scene here instantly is like they're out on the sea, aren't they? Which you find out it's not a lake, and you think it would be considering how calm it is. It's literally like ice, isn't it? Calm it is, and then. They've got the fake shark that is apparently a real shark.
Yeah, it looks terrible.
Which it looks awful. And then out of all of the ocean, this massive great liner comes right by their boat.
Of two police officers.
Who then chase it down with their badges.
It is crazy, isn't it? And it's, but I mean, again, it leads to a really quick action sequence and, you kind of don't really, at the time, you don't realise what's going on and why they're kind of panicking. And as usual, Mel Gibson boards the boat when he shouldn't. And it's good, but they've kind of cut down. I don't know. They did it a lot in this film until the end. The action with Mel Gibson, he's clearly, I don't know how old he was when they actually made this film, but he's not getting involved with much action as he was previously, was he? No, or am I just going blind?
No. I don't know. There was a lot of him laying down in this film, wasn't there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he shoots that bloke with a ricochet using his laser pointer.
That was nonsense, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, of course it was, yeah.
Well, John Wick can't do that.
John Wick doesn't need to. He's so good at hand-to-hand combat, he can have a pencil and throw it and kill him.
This is true. But then this film, we say that, and if the action wasn't dumbed down, but Mel Gibson's character not being as physical, that was also part of the story. It was a part of him and Murtagh getting older, wasn't it? And that was one of the themes throughout the film. And him, and the other thing was also tying with it was, yes, he's getting older, but then him coming to the realization of it as well, and realizing that maybe he can't do all those kind of things because he's having a family. And we had that one scene, which I thought was quite good, when obviously, you know, that whole family was almost held hostage at one point, but we'll get to that, obviously, a bit later.
Yeah, it's a good shootout on the boat, and I enjoyed it, and I like the barrel exploding, and both Myrtle and Leo Getz looking at that barrel in wonder, thinking, wow, it's amazing, and suddenly it comes down on the boat, and it sinks the boat. It is kind of very slapstick, that then the shark is after Leo. Thankfully, that's not really played in that much.
No.
And you then learn that the reason what they're doing is they're people smuggling on the boat, and there's loads of Chinese families. But the boat's obviously grounded on the beach, and the end of it, I don't know why kind of Myrtle was going on about being deaf and everything. I don't know whether that was an age thing, because he kind of really overemphasized every time that Mel Gibson spoke that he couldn't hear him. And he kept saying, "What?" I don't know whether that was. They were trying to say, well, he's older, he can't hear, or whether there was actual explosions. It didn't make a lot of sense. I don't know if you picked up on that.
No, I didn't,
to be honest. But I'm guessing it would be around the explosions of the boat.
Yeah,
and stuff
I wasn't
like that,
too
maybe.
Sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's good that Mel Gibson, on the boat, when he's kind of going through all the different rooms, that he does get his ass kicked, because he's got to get to a stage where he simply can't go on. So I like that fact. But then they do discover, when all of the Chinese people get away, a family in a boat. And I had real issues with this. And I know they were trying to send out a message, as in the slaves. And it was going back to Lethal Weapon 2 a bit, when they're talking about people being oppressed and traded. And it was going back to, obviously, what they were talking about, like the message with regards to the apartheid, weren't they? That's what I thought.
Yeah.
It seemed to affect Myrtle more than Riggs.
Yeah, I mean, it's the underlying story of the thing, isn't it, that human trafficking is wrong, which it obviously is. But
it is the underlying thing, and he refers to it, doesn't he, about rescuing people, you know, and there's lots of comments made to the guy that's there to deport them and stuff like that, or, you know, sort them out, and he's very blasé about it, like people would be if you worked in that industry. And he makes reference to his forefathers, you know, not being released and stuff like that. So it's another political statement, isn't it, that's often made in these films.
So I think you would be blasé, because that guy, he was very blasé about it, like the immigration officer, whoever he was. But I think that's because when you deal with this every single day, you become numb to everything you're dealing with. It must be like when you work in a mortuary, if someone brings a body in with no head, for me, it would be like horrific. But for them, they wouldn't bat an eyelid and they'd have a joke about it. It's not being insensitive. It's just you just come numb to...
Well, it's how you deal with it, isn't it?
Shit we're dealing with.
Yeah, it's how you deal with that situation. No one can deal with dead bodies all day and not try and make it humorous. The same with deportation or anything else. It's the human effect, isn't it?
Yeah. Jay, what did you think of the fact that when Murtaugh found the Hong family, as we know them, in a boat, he decided to keep them?
Because I think we just answered that, because the conversation he's had with the immigration guy, I think he feels like they wouldn't get a fair crack of the whip, and he was obviously he wanted, you know, and then we find out he then later looks after them.
As a police officer doing the right thing, that he's hiding an illegal family who he doesn't know, when they could be like... Dad could be a paedophile or a killer or something like that, that he decides not to keep him in the house.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very sensible of him.
If you were walking down the beach and you found a family from whatever country, and would you go, yeah, you can stay at my house?
Yes.
I'd love to see what your missus said when you brought back. I would love it.
I probably won't have one at the end of that conversation, would I?
No, you'd be living in a tent somewhere, mate. That's where you'd be living. With your newfound family.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, once again, like, kind of like in the beginning bit, as much as I like this film, it's that whole thing is a bit hard to defend. And I guess the frustrating thing was they could have come up with a very quick couple of sentences or plot reason why they're staying at his. He could have offered his home up while they're currently seeking asylum, you know, because they had nowhere else to stay, maybe, or the hotels or something, because there were so many of them. He could have offered them up or something. And you could argue maybe it was lazy writing. You could have still come to the same conclusion, but how he got to it, I think, could have been a bit different. Yeah, it's hard to argue that.
Yeah. I mean, they play into the story a lot later on, though, don't they? So I guess they needed to have this connection, and he's showing his soft spot. But you're right. No one in their right mind is going to take on this random family.
No.
You know, and the amount of trouble he would get in if he was found out to be doing this is, you know, he could end up, I don't know, I suppose he could end up going to prison or anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, because he's harboring illegal immigrants. But,
yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
You met the bad. You meet Mr. Wu Sing Koo, don't you?
Yeah.
In the restaurant.
It's so good. Yeah, and they had to. What I always love. I mean, I like martial arts films. Ip Man and stuff like that is absolutely amazing. And what I like is the fact that Jet Li was so quick. They couldn't actually capture it on camera. He had to ask him to slow his martial arts down because he was that quick. He just couldn't capture what he was doing. I mean, that is so good.
That is good. I wonder, though, in today's days of modern cameras and stuff, whether we would be able to capture it and it would look equally impressive if he did do his top speed, obviously with HD cameras and now, etc. And how different the fight scenes could have looked if he would have taken like one of the old Jet Li's Hong Kong films in the past and managed to film it with the HD cameras of today, how different it would look, you know?
I think they'd be able to capture it. Cause, I mean, Jackie Chan was offered it, but he didn't want to do it because he's never played a baddie. and he didn't want to start playing one. I don't think it would have worked with Jackie Chan either.
Too comedic.
Yeah, I think, yeah, exactly, Neil. Yeah, you wouldn't have taken him seriously. And I think, as he said to you, I think the director and the shots they choose for Jet Li, and whether he's just staring down, especially, you know, in the first half, two thirds of the film, are really, really good. And there's a lot said in those shots, even with Jet Li not doing very much, you know, which I think is good.
Yeah. And they, as you say, Neil, that the scene is when they're in the restaurant and you've got Uncle Benny there, who's like the kingpin of Chinatown, talking to Wah Sing-Ku, Jet Li's character. And they want to know about a family in particular. Did they make it through when he finds out that the boat has been, is imported? Is that the right word?
I imagine so.
There is some word that they use that I'm too bleeding thick to know what it is. And you find that they're paid off. that's true, though. They're being paid off to bring the forefathers. At the moment, you don't really understand what the forefathers are. No. It's not explained that well. And it's very typical that the guy who actually got the immigration papers for the forefathers to come in is waiting at a rail crossing with a barrier, counting his money, and he's got away with it. But then the car, I never understood this. This car's behind him, pushing him onto the railways. Why doesn't he just drive forwards?
Oh, definitely.
It's just ridiculous, isn't it?
Oh, let me try and reverse against a car that's bigger than my car while this train's coming towards me. It's just put your foot down, mate, and go.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be laughing your head off. Go and try and catch me now.
That's all you need to do. It really isn't hard. So,
It's because he's trying to overcome his adrenaline. His adrenal glands will be giving him excess adrenaline at the time because his life is in danger. And when that happens, you legit make stupid decisions. For example, if you're like, you know, running away, you're really scared or something, you try and do something as simple as putting a key in a lock, and it is actually, you know, I'm using science here, guys. It's very difficult. So I can only assume he was making a very bad decision there.
That shows how good John Wick is then, doesn't it?
Yeah, it shows how good John Wick 1 and 3 are, absolutely.
1, 2, 3, yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, 1, 2, exactly. And 3.
We'll see.
We're also introduced, whilst we're at the beach as well, to Detective Lee Butters, who's Chris Rock. And I like Chris Rock. I think he's very funny. He's easy to watch. I love him in Grown Ups. I think he's just really, really entertaining. I think this was kind of his big go at making it on the big screen, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think this is his first role, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think he's great. He was built up to be like the young Eddie Murphy, wasn't he, really?
Well, he was also considered, wasn't he, Eddie Murphy?
Yeah,
it was given. No, of course, he would have taken over the film, though, wouldn't he? Because he was too big a name.
And he's always going to be Beverly Hills Cop. And any police thing is Axel Foley. It just wouldn't work.
Mm. What a crossover that could have been then.
That would have been really, really good, wouldn't it? I mean, the next scene, what the fuck is going on with this? When Riggs goes home, what has happened to his caravan? It's a house built onto his caravan. What the fuck is that all about? How did they do that? How did they get permission? It's so weird.
Well, you don't know that. It is weird because it basically looks like one of these holiday homes you get at the seaside, isn't it? Because I find it very confusing to find out whether he's in the caravan or in the holiday house. And then you have that shot of them sitting on the balcony having breakfast, and they walk away and you clearly see the holiday house again there. And yeah, you're right. It was a bit confusing to where they were.
That doesn't make sense, does it?
No. Really? Now you brought that up. One star for this film. I've had enough now. that whole left one was there. Flipped me over the edge. No.
But it's really weird because I always thought he lives in the caravan, but when he walked through the front door, I thought, oh, he must have moved. I didn't remember him moving, but then he's back in the caravan and it's like the TARDIS. It's amazing. It's a bigger house than mine. And it's a caravan.
Well, it's not, because you got the shot when he walks away, it's clearly a cabin with a caravan next to it.
So, cut and shut home, isn't it? They've just like stapled numerous ones together.
So,
but they talk about should they get married, And but they're not arguing. That's why the baby thing is absolute bollocks. And they huge foreshadow that she's happens to be reading that he picks up in front of the camera, like virtually breaking the fourth wall of one of the Ebony Clark novels that Lorna's reading. Mm. And that plays into it later on. And he even reads excerpts out of the book. And that's when they walk down the beach and she says, look, Roger's going to be investigated by internal affairs because we think that he's on the take because he's suddenly come into a lot of money. And then she mentions the fact that Rhianne is not only pregnant, but she's married at a secret wedding to Lee Butters.
Yeah, the him getting that out of her was quite funny.
It was. I enjoyed that. And it was nice to see Renny Russo do something that didn't involve kicking the shit out of someone.
Yeah, I find her role in this film quite odd, to be honest. But no, it was she played on the pregnancy quite a lot in this bit, and obviously baby brain and all that sort of stuff. It was quite nice. It was quite nice, but she's a very confusing character in this film.
Yeah, and it also weird the fact obviously Myrtle gets his. Are you all right, James?
Yeah, mate. No, I'm listening to you. I mean, it is a bit confusing because she's got like a very mum role there, and then she plays a very different role despite being pregnant later on, doesn't she? Almost.
Yeah,
with the arse sticking.
Yeah, one time she's job pissed and talks about work, then the next minute she goes into a kitchen, finds that illegal family that Myrtle's taken in. She's quite happy about it, even though she's internal affairs, needs to investigate the police. It sits and eats a Chinese meal with them, so which is very, very strange.
Well, clearly Myrtle spoke to her before he invited the family around his, and it was okay.
Maybe
that's the case.
No, you're right. I don't know. It is a bit like that. But then, as Neil said, I did like the scene when they're walking, when that whole scene, showing how their relationship has grown since the third film, and they were, at least in that scene, at least, a very believable partnership, you know, and it looked very believable there. For me, anyway. I thought it was quite nice.
But that made it not believable as to why she wouldn't say that she's pregnant.
Yeah, you're right. And I think it's overplayed how much she's absolutely besotted with him. She's just so over the top with him. But the piss-taking's still there. But it's the same throughout the whole thing. She's just absolutely over, just all over him in emotionally. It feels to me like it's almost overplayed.
Yeah, you're right, James.
Yeah, mate, I'm good. Why?
Keep making funny noises.
Yeah, oh, really?
Noisy. It's like you're opening a packet of crisps or something.
Oh, I apologise. I can only assume. I'm so sorry. Just going to come out on the podcast. So sorry, our listeners. Probably because I'm speaking. My microphone's on the side of my face. You know, I'm using the headphones.
Yeah.
As a microphone to try and I can only assume it was rubbing against the pillow as I was sitting on the bed.
Hang on a minute.
Let me set the scene. So you've just done hot yoga.
Yep, you've had a shower.
Got out
Star
the shower.
Wars pajamas.
You're now in your sexy silk Star Wars pajamas and laying on the bed.
Yeah, I was quite relaxed talking to you, babe. It was lovely.
Wow. There you go.
It sounds like a scene out of Ebony Clark's novel.
It does.
It does, yes. Ebony Clark's novel. Very good. Absolutely.
So, and again, at Myrtle's house, like Myrtle's getting like wads of cash out, again, to remind everyone that IA think he is on the take.
And there's a lot there. When I first saw it, I initially thought it was something to do with the Chinese family, funnily enough. But that was back in 1998 when I was like, 18, 17, 18? A bit clueless, I'd imagine. So.
Well, when I first watched this, I thought he was on the take. Like, I thought maybe that's going to be a twist in the storyline, you know?
Oh, yeah, that'd be good.
That'd be really weird.
And you
find out the best way of actually getting promotion is by destroying everything, and then they're both promoted to captains, so they won't destroy stuff. I mean, it's so weird, isn't it, and contrived. It's unbelievable.
I wonder if that would work over here.
I think what's really frustrating, what I found frustrating about that, looking at the film, now we're reviewing it, didn't bother me at the time, didn't bother me at all, but when you look at the film, you know, when you know you're going to review it, you kind of watch it a different way, don't you? don't you? What was really annoying is it meant nothing throughout the whole film, and it was taken back, and at no point did that mean anything. It was completely pointless. It was just put there as some kind of plot filler in a well, it's not even a plot filler. No. It's just a scene in a 2 hour, 7 minute film, which you could have cut, wouldn't have made a difference, and would have made the film a bit shorter. I mean, I didn't have an issue with it at the time, but yeah, you're right. It just, that was more, yeah, that was completely pointless.
Well, of course, they drive for a fucking building as captains.
Yeah, there is no, you know, they're not, it doesn't keep them off the reason is to keep them off the streets, and then they just go investigating. It's so padded out. Oh. There was a lot of padding out in this.
No, you're right. And if anything, the captain, that scene, if you wanted it in, should have been at the end of the film.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, when we're talking about the timelines, as they come out of the captain's office, you've got the newspaper cut out of Murtaugh in his like pants or his boxer shorts. And Riggs turns around and says, look. And he even says it's been a year now since it happened. But how can it be a year? Because she was pregnant at the start.
Oh, yeah.
And now...
He meant around a year. He's not very good at maths, maybe. I don't know.
Man, that's bollocks, isn't it? Because she hasn't even given birth.
Yeah.
Has she? So around a year is, you know, 3 months after you have your baby. If you say, oh, it was 6 months ago, it'd be more believable.
Yeah, yeah. True.
There you go. Half a star now, Jay. I'm doing it. I always manage to twist fucking your melons about this and get you to change your mind. I want to do it again.
It's not happening. This is still getting a good rating. And at the moment it's 6 out of 5 stars.
So, wow.
But it's true, the more this annoys you, the more stars I'll give it.
Though the continuity error, I did like it. I thought it was funny that it was obviously Mel Riggs that had planned this, and he was having a go at everyone, and then just sticking it back up again or getting another piece to stick back up. It's brilliant.
This is what these two are best at, playing off each other like it. I think it's. Yeah. I wish they did more of this, just kind of bouncing off each other kind of jokes, because it always works. And even when I watched it tonight, it still gets a laugh because it's just so funny. It's just what makes all of these films really, really good. And they didn't do it enough in this film.
No, it'd be interesting to see how much was ad-libbed as well. I'd imagine a lot more in this film possibly would have been than maybe the first three, or definitely one and two.
Chris Rock probably ad-libbed a lot, I would have thought, because that's his style, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, he basically does a short stand-up like skit, doesn't he, each time he's in the scene.
Yeah. And you actually find out, for the first time, the name of the, not that I can remember, but the name of the psychiatrist, who, again, she gets wound up majorly by Riggs.
Dr. Woods?
Yes. Oh, Captain Riggs.
No, don't run.
I'm in a rush.
Yeah, I need to talk to you about it.
Do you? Oh, wait, what is it this time? Reoccurring dreams about flying dwarfs? Or have you managed to cook up something entirely new?
Look, I'm sorry about all that. I wanted your advice. I was thinking of...
Thinking?
Marriage.
The M word?
What? I mean, does confidentiality mean anything to you?
That's
could
funny.
Keep it down?
You know what would happen?
What?
We'd go into my office, and you know what you'd end up telling me?
What?
You'd tell me something like, Doc, I want to marry Myrtle.
Or
your mother, maybe. Or how about Nelson Mandela? Something to ridicule me, Riggs. Something to get a rise out of me. Listen carefully. I'm not stupid. And my time is reserved for police officers with real needs and real problems. Have you got that? Have you?
Can you run it by me again?
No. And you know what? I don't like you.
Stephanie? I can't go out with you. I'm in a relationship. I'm very happy. All right? I think you need to see someone. Look, you'll find someone someday who'll care for you and love you. Not in this department, but you're going to have to stop bothering me.
You're disgusting. What's the matter with you people?
Yeah, I didn't get this scene either, to be honest.
No,
I don't think it was needed at all, to be honest.
Did you think it was funny?
No.
Oh, I liked it. I thought it was really funny. The way she was walking away, just
Oh, that was good.
Win in frustration. I quite like that. But again, if you didn't have it, it wouldn't have mattered, you know?
No. But the fact is, you know, she's a psychiatrist and she's there to help people. And I know he winds her up, but she needs a bloody psychiatrist with the way she acts around him and storms off.
I think that's the joke, though.
I understand that's the joke, but it's just, to me, it wasn't funny.
Fair enough.
I got the joke. I understand what they were trying to do. I thought, what's the point in this? It didn't add anything for me. But
I get it. But I felt she kind of has to turn up because she's in every hour. I just stepped on one of the kids. I walked down the stairs and I stepped on the kids. What the fuck? Down the bottom of the stairs, I stepped on. There's a lion, a race car, a blue croc, and a fucking book about a pig. It's an animal ark.
And it's, you sound like Leo Getz. You really do.
It does, doesn't it?
Okay. And they fuck you with it, yeah. Sorry, I'm so sorry about that, guys.
No, wouldn't have it any other way.
Pardon me. There's no podcast like a James podcast, is there?
Yeah, apologies, Neil. Sorry.
But from they bump into Butters, who's overly nice. And we know the reasons why, because he is the secret husband of Rianne. And he's overly nice. And they kind of wind Murtaugh up that he's possibly gay because it's a new police force, a new world. And it kind of does it to basically wind him up, and because Murtaugh is too nice, he's too much of a gentleman to say anything. That joke doesn't work for me, I've got to admit. I don't know if it's because we've all moved on, but it just doesn't work that they use his kind of his sexuality, whatever, as a joke. I don't know. I honestly think it's because times have changed and we've changed with it. I think
you're right, Stu. I think at the time, you know, being gay and stuff, though there obviously is nothing wrong with it, but back in the late 90s and stuff, it was still very taboo, wasn't it? And I think, you know, men were very worried about it, and, you know, heterosexual men were like, a bit standoffish of it and stuff like that. So I think you're right. I think it was very much of the time.
Yeah. And I think that's what highlights that, is the fact that they would have chosen the original plot was for him to be homosexual, then they changed it. I think it would have worked better if he actually was homosexual. But I know at the time, as you say, back in, 89? See, times are thankfully changed now. But it would have been so different. It would have been so original back then to do something like this, I think.
Well, that's the thing. I think they did, like you say, they did do it originally. But then as they started filming it, they said that they felt it didn't work. So then they wrote this other part in, which is and isn't believable. You know, it would have been brave, wouldn't it, like you say, but they clearly weren't brave enough to go down that line.
Yeah, you say it would have been brave, but then with the way they were handling the joke, which I didn't have a massive problem with, I thought it was overplayed maybe a bit much, but I think you're right. Would it have been done today? Probably not. But that will give me not much confidence, though, in the script, how they would have actually handled a, someone that fancies, obviously, Merton. And I don't know that would be handled very well in the guise of, people might have found it funny in 1998, 22 years on. It might have been like, oh, gosh, you know, that's not good.
But it would have been good if they would have, like, found out, because Murtaugh's old school is quite old-fashioned.
That's true, yeah. If they'd done handled well, yeah.
Yeah, if it would have written as in, they know he's
I don't know how they'd be able to finish the joke off.
Yeah, but not make it a joke, but make it the joke on, like, Murtaugh's ignorance about it. But Murtaugh thinks he fancies him because he's gay, and that it's a case of, just because you're another bloke and we work together, it doesn't mean that I'm going to naturally fancy you. Yeah. And kind of show the prejudice out there, that people, or the stereotype out there that people think. But again, because we live in different times now, it may work now. But back then, I don't think they'd have been brave enough, because people weren't as educated or as sensible or as accepting now back then, you know what I mean? But it would have been nice to play it in a shock way, as in, yeah, he's homosexual, but it doesn't mean I'm going to fancy you. Look, just fucking get with it, you know, and just show their ignorance more than anything else.
No, I suppose you could have done it that way.
Yeah. But again, that would have been way above Shane Black's writing ability, I think, especially as the shit that he put down last time. So with everything exploding, the helicopters and the Hollywood sign on fire and shit like that. So, and again, the next scene we come to, it sounds like I'm doing a lot of moaning, and it doesn't genuinely reflect on this film, but they're being followed by Leo, and they pull over. And again, it's just, it's too much kind of over the top of them bullying Leo. I like it when, again, it works. I love it that Leo thinks, what's the guy done in the back? And when Chris Rock, just because I'm black, I think I'm guilty.
Hey, Riggs, who's the perp? What'd you bust him for?
Oh, I'm a perp? Oh, you see a young brother in the back of a police car, automatically I'm a perp? Look at my suit. Look at my tie. What do I look like, the fucking Crips accountant? Look at this badge, bitch. Check out the gun.
Okay, put the gun down.
License, registration, urine sample.
Hey, I got a badge too, okay? Hey, German Jews didn't have it any easier when we were kids, so don't think you're the only one, okay? Okay? Besides, I knew you were a cop. I was only kidding with you.
And that plays off so well. The kind of the dialogue there between them is really, really funny. But it was bullying against him again, I thought.
Yeah, this was him coming in to being a PI now, isn't he? So he was a money launderer, then he was a, you know, an estate agent, and now he's a PI.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, what did you think, Jay? Did you like this?
Yeah, I loved it.
Did you think it was bullying?
No. Yeah, I mean, it was bullying, but it didn't bother me to the point of it's not real, it's a film. It's a bit. It's there for a reason, and as you mentioned, the reason really was for Chris Rock to basically, berate him in the back of the car, and then they play the joke about obviously him getting stopped by a traffic cop. And I thought it was all quite funny.
I love the way he did the breath test, blow into my glove.
What the hell was that?
That must be an official way of doing it.
Yeah, that was a bit weird, wasn't it?
Like an upgrade 37% or whatever they do, I don't know.
No. I think so.
But, and then they go in to see, which is a scene I do like. I think it's quite funny. They go in to see Uncle Benny at the restaurant. And it's good. You've got the one-way glass there. That's right, one-way glass, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
And You've
mirror,
got
one-way mirror.
Mirror, that's it. Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. And Jet Li hides at the back. And the way they take the piss out of Uncle Benny is just quite funny. You've got that kind of, the dialogues is really, really quick. And they're just, I think this works really well. This is going back to Lethal Weapon 1 and 2, that they do this so well, both of Murtaugh and Riggs.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely true. It is really well done. I think some people looking at it now might be a bit sensitive about it. But it's fried rice you pick. I find that, you know, it was good, and it was very clear going into it that they knew Uncle Ben, they knew him, and they had, and it did feel like the two in and frying, there was a relationship between Riggs and Murtaugh and Uncle Benny, because obviously he knows him as well, doesn't he?
They've worked, or they've worked together. They've been against each other before, haven't they?
Oh, sell any heroin, buy any cops, kill anyone, lady? How's the front restaurant?
Have something to eat. Give you the police discount.
Fly lice?
Fly lice. It is fry rice, you prick.
Yeah, and it was a very good example of the director doing showing, not telling, in terms of, you didn't have any, Uncle Benny, we go way back, etc. on the way there. It was just in that little scene, you knew straight away from the dialogue they were having that there's some history there. Didn't matter what the history was, but they know him, and that, I thought that was quite good.
Yeah, it worked well for me. What about you, Neil? What did you think?
It was a good scene. Again, I think you're right, James. I think maybe the times are, I was like, oh, it's
to me now, it's an old joke, and it's been done so many times, the talking in a Chinese accent and taking the piss out of them. I didn't find it funny, but I'm sure I would have done at the time.
No, I didn't find that funny. I mean, I did find Uncle Benny's comments funny and the banter they had with each other funny. And I thought with Mel Gibson, it was when he went up to Jet Li's character and started doing the Chinese voice, which I thought potentially wasn't needed. No. I think that was the time he was doing the Chinese accent, wasn't it? But up until that point, I thought it was quite a solid, it was quite a good scene.
Yeah, it was surprising how much, when you see things like that, like this, it does date this film terribly, doesn't it?
It does. But what I didn't get with this is, I know they're cops and they're captains and everything, but they just go around smashing stuff.
Yeah.
How can you? You can't just go.
Yeah.
Do cops just go around smashing?
Are you talking about when he smashes the mirror?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the view of that is, yes, they're not real cops. Real cops, I imagine, don't do that. But I mean, he's Mel Gibson. Riggs gives a point after he smashes it. Well, they're not exactly going to call the cops, because it's quite obvious to everyone that Uncle Ben's restaurant is a front for obviously dodgy activity. And it was just a way of him saying, F you, what are you going to do about it? And yeah, no, you're right.
But it does lead to a good foot chase, which again highlights just how old both of them are, doesn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
But we do get the running chase with Mel Gibson, which we've had in every single film. And Danny Glover jumps on a bike. And you've got Chris Rock there, who is young enough and fit enough to actually keep up. I mean, I quite enjoyed this foot chase. It was the most they could do, bearing in mind the age of everyone, really, isn't it?
Yeah, but Mel still runs, doesn't he? He runs and runs. I know he doesn't catch up to him, but well, he sort of does and doesn't. But, you know, he half runs still.
He does. I don't know how much of it is actually him, because some of it is, but a majority of it is behind him when you see him running.
No, I'm sure it isn't Mel, no, but it's just funny that he's, you know, he still can run. You know, every film he can run for what feels like miles at full pelt. And yeah, it's a standard Mel run.
On our full film now, who is the running man in these films, like in films in general, in action films? For me, it is still Tom Cruise. Tom's my man.
But he likes to have a run as well, doesn't he, to be fair?
He's a legend.
It's true. He does like to run. And he's only got little legs. So, yeah, that does make him even more special, doesn't it?
Careful. I'm only 3 centimetres taller than him.
Are you?
Yeah.
Are you really?
Yeah. I'm 173. I think he's 170. But he wears, a lot of people say he wears lifts in his shoes, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He has to stand on boxes and stuff like that, doesn't he, in certain scenes?
I remember when he got cast as Jack Reacher, I thought, he's a good actor, but completely the wrong, for the Jack Reacher films, I thought it was completely wrong, miscast there.
Yeah, I mean, Jack Reacher's a black male, isn't he?
No, he's not.
Isn't he? I thought he was.
He's white and he's got he's white. He's got blonde hair, I think.
I'm thinking of Alex Cross, aren't I? He's a I think James Patterson books. Alex Cross.
Yeah. Jack Reacher's Lee Child, isn't it?
Wrong author.
But yeah, he's meant to be about 6'4" with blonde hair and blue eyes, I think.
I wish I was. I tell you, blind me.
But anyway, yeah.
You're so nice. But yeah, so you've got the foot chase, and it's the guys that they recognise from the boat earlier. And majority of it is chasing, and it's not a lot of action. And they capture one guy who turns out not to be the guy. I don't know whether he is or whether he's just fobbing him off, but he says he's from a local restaurant, and you get some real shit jokes about what was on the menu. Then they let him go. And Mel Gibson is hanging onto a roof. The other guy gets away and he falls into a wheelie bin, which they line up below.
That's the longest fall in the world, isn't it, from the shortest distance?
Yeah, it's huge, isn't it? It really is. That Empire State Building fall. It's incredible.
It is. It's ridiculous. It's like, mate, he's only up a little bit. He could have fallen down and sprained an ankle if he'd just fallen off normally. But it takes him 3 hours to fall off a tiny ledge.
It didn't really work for me, this scene. It was a bit long-winded. And again, they kind of put too much effort into virtually hardly any payoff whatsoever.
Yeah, and like you say, that guy, he's just, they just ask him what's on the specials. They don't know what's on the specials, and he just reels off a load of typical Chinese food. And they go, oh, all right, and let him go. It's just...
There was no joke there, was it? There, no. Again, it's like, you're Chinese, you must work in a restaurant, and that's it. It was just, did not work for me in any way whatsoever. But what did work was when suddenly, unknown how he knows he's there, Jet Li is up on the roof. And that's when you learn, or you start to learn, that Jet Li is probably in charge, and he's really menacing, and he's extremely ruthless. And he doesn't do much karate, but or kung fu or whatever he does. He's amazing at it anyway.
Mm.
But he takes this guy out just Matrix style, one hand. And it's absolutely awesome. I love martial arts. It's something that I really wish I could do, but it's so good.
There's a reason why you don't do it though, Stu, is because you would be the best.
That's what would worry me. That it'll be something else that I'd be good at. I'll have to have it to the CV.
You'd accidentally kill someone with it.
Yeah. My CV
would
be
try and give
like
someone a hug and
20 pages instead of fucking whatever. But I know I'd be good at it. And that, it'll bore everyone.
Yeah, exactly. They go, oh, it's Stu again, kicking over things, you know. Fuck's sake, give it a rest.
Can't get his leg above 4 inches in the air. Yeah. But from... Obviously, Jet Li kills the guy because he has fucked up and he can't be trusted and he's incompetent. You go back to Murtaugh's house where you've got Hong, or the kind of the dad, and he's very similar. He has a really heart-to-heart chat about kids, about growing up and the kids kind of leaving the nest. And it was a kind of padded out, but a nice moment. It was quite nice just to... see Murtaugh. I always think he gets hard done by screen time in all of these films. And it wasn't particularly the best acting, but it was nice just to see him get some screen time for me.
Yeah, it built the story, didn't it, between him and the family, that he's allowed to live in the home, and this mutual respect between him and Hong. So, no, it was quite touching. Yeah, like you say, the acting wasn't particularly brilliant. But no, I think, it was a scene that was, it added to the story, because they did, like I said, they do come into it quite a lot later on, don't they?
Yeah, he gives it a watch, doesn't he? Which is, which is quite nice, I suppose. But yeah, it was just, I like Danny Glover. I think he's a really good actor. And it's just, I think, as you said earlier, Neil, when the poster, it's even Mel Gibson. Was it you, James? Mel Gibson's bigger than Danny Glover.
It's not right, I don't think.
It's hard done by it. But the next scene, because I'm really thick, it was only now that I'm supposedly an adult that I actually understood what they were doing in the next scene. And the forefathers are four heads of the triad, the Chinese syndicate that once ran organised crime in Hong Kong. And the Chinese took over Hong Kong when England left it in 97. And no surprise, I'm actually reading this. And they imprisoned the forefathers, and what then the triad currently operating out of Chinatown, Los Angeles, headed by Jet Li and assisted by Uncle Benny. So they're attempting to buy back the forefathers from Chinese government. That's why they're kind of paying them the money. I didn't realize that. I just thought that I didn't actually fucking have a clue what they were doing, to be honest. It was, and I was really embarrassed that a storyline in Lethal Weapon 4 confused me.
I'll be honest, when I was watching this, I knew it was obviously something to do with Jet Li and Uncle Benny, but at the time I had no freaking idea what was going on, to be honest. It sort of just seemed to flit about, and like, so that's something else just to do with the, you know, the illegal importation of people, you know, the smuggling of people. But
it was a bit weird, wasn't it? But so they kind of, they didn't even explain what they were doing. But again, I'm stupid. James, I bet you understood it, didn't you?
No.
Thank God for that. Excellent. But a scene I did understand was the next one, where, again, they're fucking shoving age down your throat. Not that I need it at my age, but Mel Gibson is boxing a younger kid, and he fakes an injury. The shoulders put out, he can't carry on. That's when he says, look, I was faking it and I can't do it, we're old. And I know they're old, but, and I don't know it intentionally, But in the background, there's always someone who's really fit and ripped behind him.
Oh, that guy is ridiculously stacked, isn't he?
I know. It was like Arnie from the 80s walking past, wasn't it?
It was ridiculous. Like walking past Stu and James in the changing room. It was ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, as if.
Stu and James are sitting down on a bench chatting. That's who they get.
I'm too old for this. Yeah, I know. And that's us after one thumb war. Probably known us. So, destroy us.
But I didn't need to know just how old they feel. I can see it. I get the general gist of it. I don't know what you guys thought about it.
It's a laboured point, isn't it, in this film?
See, I liked it because...
I
liked it. And now this is getting 7 out of 5 stars because I know it upsets you. That is another star. I thought it was quite good because it kind of like... I get why you could say it labels it, but it's. I think it's quite important for the character of Mel, which then plays into the last scene when I think in their fight with Jet Li, is... He realises he's not what he used to be. He can't do what he can do. And I think also it makes both their characters potentially, if I think I'm watching it the first time, vulnerable to the point of, are both of them going to come out of this film completely unscathed? Or is one of them going to die?
Did you really think one of them could die then?
When I first watched it, I did. Yeah.
Cool. He's really read into this scene, haven't he?
No, but I'm just saying that was my feeling at the time. Well, no. I'm just defending it. I'm just defending it against two horrible people.
That's right. We are nasty bastards.
Yeah, absolutely.
We are. You know, I get it. They're old. You can see they're old. You know, bless Mel, he's still, you know, can run, but you can tell he's putting a few pounds in it and stuff. He still looks good, but, you know, and obviously Murtaugh's supposed to retire 6 years ago. But he's now looking, when he took his clothes off at the beginning, was looking, you know, better than I ever have done in my entire life. So.
He looks good, doesn't he? Murtaugh is pretty, pretty good. Yeah.
He's, you know, for what he must have been playing someone that he's pretending to be in his 60s or whatever now. Yeah. You know, he's not bad. Let's be fair to him.
God, no. You know. What did you think of the next scene? Because I know you got a lot of praise and love for this film. They're back in the office, back in the police station, and it's the first time properly that Leo meets Butters, and you realise that they're exactly the same kind of personality, and they have exactly the same conversation.
I liked it.
I did as well. I thought you'd be surprised.
I was waiting for you to say something. That's why I was so sure. No, I thought it was good. It was. Basically, it was almost like a stand-up routine between the two of them, but I think it worked really well.
I did. What did you think, Neil?
Well, they just pick on Leo again, as they always do, and they take the piss out of him, pull him out of the chairs and all this sort of stuff, and he tells a stupid story about him buying a fake dog to solve the case of the missing dog and painting it a different colour just to show his incompetence. And then, it was nice to see for a moment after they had the tete-a-tete in the back of the car, that they can bond.
Yeah.
Mm.
So it was nice in that way. But after a while, Chris Rock realised, he's like, what the fuck am I talking to this guy for?
Yeah.
And then mugs him off anyway.
Yeah. I like the initial banter between Leo and Butters. I like that. I thought it was good. But it does get... a bit repetitive, but I mean the next scene I like when they go back to Murtaugh's house and the Triad gang are there, got their family hostage. I was really unsure which way it was going to go. I have to say, I thought when I originally watched this that Renny Russo would lose her baby, and that would be the fuel that kind of Mel Gibson needs to take down this gang. I was hoping it wouldn't be, because he's had a really shit run of things with obviously Mrs. keep getting murdered all the time. But I was glad that didn't work out. But again, I liked the fight. It was good action. I was glad that they both got their asses kicked and that the baby was absolutely fine, because it's more realistic. They're never going to take these on. And again, it shows how good Jet Li is, that single-handedly he just stands there and watches, and he just takes everyone on himself. And I even admit that bloke just kicks shit out of them. I mean, you've done wrestling, Jay. You know this stuff.
Oh, God. You know what, mate? I was counting down to that.
at some part, in this episode.
But yeah, you're like the Jet Li of the wrestling ring.
Mate, I'm bloody not. I'm definitely sure you.
The Stallion in the house, taking out Mel Gibson, taking out Danny Glover. I can see it. Honestly,
one man army.
Well, what can I say? I'll be crying in the corner, I'd imagine.
If anyone listening does like my kind of going back to James doing wrestling, which he was an amateur wrestler, very keen wrestler as well, that go and listen to our wrestler podcast. It is an amazing film, one of the best films I've ever seen. But we do have quite an in-depth personal look. It's more of an interview with James, plus we do talk about the rest of the film.
Such a dick.
But go and have a listen to that. It's a touching, very honest account of the world of wrestling, plus we talk about a film. Isn't that right, James?
It is. Yep, you're right. I don't have the strength to argue with anymore, do you?
So my question is, right, why did they not just put a bullet in the head of every single person in the house rather than let it start burning, then walk away? I really get sick of this shit when they do this in films.
Because they had to do it in films, because that's you need to progress the plot, and that would have ended it very quickly. I mean, that's the short answer.
Do it.
That's the short answer. I think the long answer is that he's a Chinese triad and a really evil bastard. So he wanted to make them suffer as long as possible.
That's poor house. His house insurance must be a fortune.
Yeah.
Well, it's been blown up.
Cars through the window, everything. Yeah. It's unbelievable. I'd love to know what his premium is. But they are about to die when the younger child of the Hon family comes and with some scissors. Conveniently, they're not handcuffed because they'd be screwed then and they would die. But they are duct taped. So the little kid does go and rescue them, and they all escape unharmed. And again, when Butters turns up, he can't tell them that he's the dad. He just has to lip read in an amazing... It's probably the best lip read in acting I've seen in a long time.
Well, do you know what really frustrated me about this scene? And I know I clearly don't like this film. is the fact that they're all tied up on the floor as it's being set on fire. And tell me if I'm wrong here, but they're all on the floor coughing and spluttering because of the smoke. But yet all the guys sitting on fire are just standing around, not having any issue breathing whatsoever.
No, it's amazing, isn't it?
And I'm pretty sure smoke rises.
Yeah, it's a nonsense.
It's bollocks. But no, you're right. It was quite nice, wasn't it, that when old Butters turns up and he's clearly shitting himself because he's hoping his missus is all right, but he can't say anything. But everyone else knows, apart from Murtagh.
It is good lip reading, though, isn't it? He must have had training. You can't just do that stuff off the cuff, you know?
Yeah. I do also like the fact that the little kid cuts all them open with safety scissors.
Yes. Safety first, you know?
Yeah.
That's the most important thing. And we do get following that. Luckily enough, he asked them for the helicopter flying over, can you find two black cars on a motorway? And they joke about it, but they actually do. All of the cars in, what is it, Los Angeles or wherever they are, they do find the car or both the cars. But I really like this action scene. And all through the films, the practical effects are really, really good. And I look forward to this one because I remembered that I couldn't remember what film, but there was a chase on the motorway when they had this big caravan that they were towing and he was sliding down this table. It is over the top. It's unbelievable. But it's really, really good that a stuntman has done this. I always think it's incredible when it's a person actually doing these amazing stunts. And I love it also that you can tell that it's not Mel Gibson.
Oh, big time.
I think it's brilliant. I think it's so good when they do these stunts and you think, fuck it, the stunt is better than the person doing it. So it doesn't matter if it doesn't look like him at all. I just think it's great. It's an incredible stunt, isn't it?
Yeah, this was filmed in Las Vegas.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it was the only state that would allow them to do it.
Wow.
So every single car on that motorway, obviously, is stunt drivers.
It's incredible,
isn't
it?
Stuff like that. So, yeah, but Los Angeles and nowhere else would let them film it. So it was actually done in Las Vegas.
All of those people have got to be paid. And you can understand why films have such big budgets when everyone has got to be paid. And there's shitloads of cars on the motorway, isn't there?
Mm. Yeah. It's very well done. It really is. Even though you can tell it's not Mel, because the guy doing it is about three times the size of him.
Yeah, it's so funny. It really...
It's hilarious, especially when he's being dragged along on the table. The guy's fucking huge.
Yeah.
That or it's all the padding that he's having to wear just in case he falls off.
Yeah, it's so funny. But it's really good, and it's really original that the plastic side sheeting to this kind of porter cabinet they're towing gives way, and he's dragged down the motorway on a wooden table that can take high-speed chases that doesn't break away. It's amazing. It must be mahogany, but it's really entertaining stunt. I love this. I've got no problems with it not being Mel Gibson, like, overtly.
No.
It just
what did you think?
So what well.
Did you think, James?
Like it. No, I loved it. It reminded me of it didn't remind me of, but it's almost like that scene in the Matrix sequel. You know, it kind of almost reminded me of that because it was so epic, and they were going on for such a long time. It'd be interesting to see what stretched. You know, they actually filmed it on. It was brilliant from the start to him getting in the caravan, and then the whole, like, you know, who's getting at some point, you know, they're going to fall out, don't you, with the slightly stronger than cling film or whatever they were using at the side. And
do you know what always gets me though is that the henchmen, you know, they're driving like absolute men nutcases, don't they? Then all of a sudden they slow down so they can be caught up again.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you just do one until there's no way that you could be caught? But they don't. They just sort of, shit, they're chasing me. Oh, we got away from me for a little bit. And they just slow back down, don't they? To it's normal traffic speed.
Henchman etiquette.
Yeah, it's like only speed when you have to.
But again, as you said earlier, I think you knew, I think, I'm not sure, but they do drive through a building and they destroy it. Like, it's like Terminator, isn't it, with a helicopter going through. They destroy a whole office floor with driving their car through it. And when they're at the office other side, I like the fact that this car then just gets smashed by a lorry, but the guy gets out and only half the door and he's fucking dead. I would like to have seen his head missing. Something more dramatic, like the surfboard guy.
Surfboard guy.
Yeah, it would have been good, but this kind of ends their lead. But it was a really good chase for me. I thought it was the best bit of action we've had in this film so far. I know we've not had that much. We had the foot chase earlier and the guy at the start, but this was the best bit for me. I thought it was really, really good.
It was. It went quite dark at one point, though, as well, when his mate got run over by that lorry.
Yeah,
that was good. You actually saw him get hit. And he sort of semi explodes, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it's like Final Destination. It was freaking awesome, wasn't it?
I was surprised at that because generally you don't get that level of sort of gore in these films.
No.
Do you?
No, they did have a in the UK they had another version where they've actually cut lots of scenes out of it. There was like eye gouging, like neck breaks and headbutts, and there's loads of sound effects when people got garroted and stuff like that. But and they tried to reduce the sound of this happening, but it didn't pay off, so they actually cut the scenes. So it was a 15, and I think there was quite a lot of, was it 1:30 of like hardcore action of fighting, of people being garroted and stuff, cut out of this film to make it 15. Yeah. So, but I mean, to carry on the not understanding really why things happen, the next scene is Jet Li with the forefathers, and one of them is his brother, coincidentally. That there's, they don't really play that out too much, but they're down in America to carry on basically the triad gang in Chinatown, I suppose, aren't they?
Yeah, he's gone to visit them, hasn't he? And he's seeing this dodgy general. And they're all dressed in pink. And it's just to go and say hello. I suppose it's to put that connection together, isn't it? But
yeah. And from there, you go on to the scene that I did like. And I thought it was quite nice. It was when they go and see Uncle Benny at the dentist. And they get poor Leo sacrifices his teeth to make out he's got an appointment. It looks so awful and painful what they're doing to him. But it's just so Butters, Riggs and Murtaugh can go and talk to Uncle Benny about the forefathers and what's actually happening. I quite like this scene. I didn't like Leo's scene because I hate the dentist. I really do. But I thought it was just quite nice seeing them all off their tits on laughing gas.
It was good.
No, not for me.
No,
not for me. Sorry.
No, why?
It was over the top. It was just over the top. And for me, maybe it's me, maybe it's my ears or something, my naivety, but I couldn't understand anything any of them were saying. And it was just over the top. And then he learns that Butters is going to be his son-in-law, or he is his son-in-law, and all this. And I got it, I understood it, but it just was so over the top. I didn't laugh at all.
I was creasing. I was watching it with Michelle and my mother-in-law, and we all really enjoyed it. But that's interesting, Neil. It'd be a boring world if we all liked the same thing.
I get it. Don't get me wrong. I get it. And I think maybe years ago, maybe I would have enjoyed it. But I don't know. I just don't find this kind of thing funny anymore. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, I think this film, I think I mentioned it at the beginning, maybe this is an example of it. It does go near that dangerous line, but I don't think it crosses it, as I mentioned, of Riggs and Mortar and becoming caricatures, of themselves in the previous three films. And I don't think it crosses it, but I think this is an example of what, even though I did enjoy the scene, this is one of a few examples of when I think it does go near that line. And I think had the scene been any longer or stretched any more, although I think it's a good scene, it would have been overkill and it might have gone over that mark.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I liked it. I thought it was a stupid, funny scene. It was a weird way of introducing the fact that he has got a baby coming and now are married.
Yes.
It was it was a way of doing it without any controversy, without any arguments. And I think it was the easiest way of doing it with humour, of introducing the baby. But it was strange. I mean, from there, you then go to the factory where Hong gets reunited with his uncle. His uncle has told him he's stopped working. He's making these plates to print the money out. And it's strange. He said, I'm not going to work. And then Hong gets introduced to his uncle. And immediately, Jet Li breaks Hong's neck. And that is it. It shows how ruthless he is. And it's a shame because he's come all that way and it's just a waste of a journey, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think that whole thing, the whole relationship with Morta and Hong,
Murta.
What happens? Murta, I said Morta, God's sake. This is the fourth freaking film I've read, yeah.
I think that's Murta. Like the film so much.
Morta, yeah. the main reason I think we had that scene and the whole relationship, and it was built up to this, but was obviously to give something Jet Li to do, for Jet Li to do, and to make us dislike him more, being obviously the main villain, because at this point he hasn't done that much. When you could, even though I think he's one of the, he's for me the second best villain in the series, but in terms of actually doing anything and being proactive about anything, he's done very little compared to the other villains up until what, the 2/3, 3/4 point of the film, compared to the last, the other Lethal Weapon films.
Yeah, I'd have liked to have seen this film made instead of number 3 when these two are at their peak, and I'd like to have seen this a lot darker film, a lot more violent film, and it would have really, really been a great action, hardcore, violent film. I think that, and I know you can't do that, you need to get the viewers in, you need to make it either, maybe nowadays it would be a PG-13. But
well, you say that, Stu. You say that.
Seeing a more violent, dark film, yeah. Great.
And I think it would work really well. And I think studios, I think, are silly now in 20 now when they're very scared about doing R-rated films. They don't think they do very well. When it's been proven with Wolverine and Deadpool, for example, if you take away the superhero, yes, they're superhero films, but they're R-rated. And normally you think superhero films, kids, straight away. As in, you're going to be potentially one of your main audiences. But they were very, very successful, weren't they? And I think studios shouldn't really be scared of doing that at all.
No.
Maybe they want these bigger audiences possible, don't they? It's all about the money rather than...
They do, but yeah, you say that. But had you made Deadpool a 12, I doubt there would have been a sequel, and I don't think it would have made as much money.
No, you're completely right. You are completely right.
I know what you mean, though. Studios are scared. They want the money. Yeah, and then don't want to take the risk, do they?
No, they don't. No. They see the dollar signs over the actual art of filmmaking.
Yeah, absolutely.
These days. And I think you're right, Stu, that this thinking about it, if they'd done it without, as instead of a Lethal Weapon film, it could have been a really good action cop film.
Yeah, it would have been really good. Like, it would have been a proper cop thriller.
Yeah.
You could still have the very dark comedy in there and things like that, but I think the storyline is very good with the human trafficking, the money laundering. Mm-hmm. I think it's very relevant at the time. Even now it is as well, probably more so now.
Yeah.
But it could have made it a really dark film because Jet Li could have done so much more. But
yes,
it's still perfectly acceptable. But I would have liked to have seen these two in their prime in this similar role. But I mean, from there, I didn't know, and I was very surprised, and I forgot when I watched this again, that once they print all their money that they're going to have to get the forefathers back, that they actually kill Uncle Benny, Jet Li does. And I completely forgot they did that, that he actually wasn't part of the plot, the reasons why they were doing it. But and then follows another scene that didn't work for me. There's when Mel Gibson this time, Rennie Russo, and the child are at the level crossing, the same one they killed the guy in earlier, but they then smash their car and try and go over the train lines. But Mel Gibson does the sensible thing, what anyone else would do.
Yeah, his glands clearly weren't full.
Absolutely, Neil. Yeah. Absolutely. Using science.
His glands out earlier.
Yeah, I think he's put them all over her face or something.
His glands are in a tissue down the toilet.
I like Uncle Benny being killed because he clearly thought that he was the big cheese, didn't he?
Yeah.
And that Wasinku, or whatever is how you say it, was working for him, but in actual fact he was just being used by him. So it was, I like that he got sort of topped off.
Yeah.
But yeah, it, and obviously now they're going after Mel and everyone. Bricks and Mortar.
I'm not going to leave that one down for a while, am I?
Yeah, no.
Fair enough.
And but like, he does the right thing, and instead of trying to reverse against it, he actually drives off. But
yeah, I really liked the two cops in this, the one with the long hair and the other Chinese cop who are working on this case as well. I wish they would have come into it more because I thought they were really good characters, really entertaining. It would have been great to see them team up more on kind of a different adventures in this and different kind of investigations because they're just so different. They're a bit like a younger Riggs and Walter, I think. Isn't that right?
Shut up. Yeah. Mate, you've done it now. I've even forgotten his last name now, so I'm scared to say it.
Murtaugh.
That's it, Murtaugh, yeah.
But yeah, so they then, I don't know how they know where they need to go, but then they bust the factory, but everyone's gone.
Because they know, don't he? That Chinese cop, he knows.
Oh, is he the one who knows?
He's the one that knows about the dodgy general and stuff like that, so he leads them to
it. I'm glad you were watching it. So then they find Hong sadly dead. It's a sad Hong's dead. Very, very sad. Upside, Walter gets his watch back, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Or even Murtaugh does, James. He gets his watch.
Yes, he does.
Do you think deep down he was happy about getting his watch back? I reckon.
No.
I thought he was going to leave the watch with him.
I did. If he really meant to give it to him,
yeah,
he would have left the watch on his wrist. I thought that. Yeah. But then he took it back and he was in such a rush to get back in the car. There you go. Sums him up.
It does, really.
He's making money. He's a
all
different money, man. Eh? But from there, in a twist, how they don't die, I honestly don't know. But they turn up at the docks and announce to the other triad leader that all of the money's fake. That the money that Jet Li is trying to buy his forefathers back with is fake. And I like the fact that even Mel Gibson points out it is a plan. We don't know how it's going to work out, but it's just an idea he had. And then they're caught in the middle of a crossfire between both gangs. I like this. I thought it was just utter mayhem. It wasn't thought out. There was no structure to it. I thought it worked really well. And again, you've got Mel Gibson, Danny Glover bouncing off each other, just taking the piss out of this gang. And it just worked well for me, especially with Jet Li stood in the background, not saying a word. And the expression on his face is one of, I'm going to kick crap out of you. And I wouldn't have the balls enough to walk in and do this, I have to say.
No, it follows the same trope of every film that they do in this, though, don't they? Instead of doing it like they would actually do it, which you might go in like this, but behind you, hidden on the roofs and everything, you would have an army of SWAT team.
Oh, God, yeah.
Wouldn't you?
It's way at the top.
No, no. We'll take four cops and we'll go on take on, you know, a general and a triad gang.
Yeah, definitely. James, you liked this. I bet you did, didn't you?
Loved every minute of it. Yeah.
So I didn't have a problem either. That must hurt you, James, so much. That must cut you deep.
It did. I'm bleeding, mate. I'm bleeding out. Yeah, no, I know. I get what Neil says. I think it's kind of like a nod back, though, to the recklessness of Mel Gibson's character, I think, in the first couple of films, albeit now he does have a family and more to lose. And yes, I mean, it is a bit hard to argue that why they didn't go in there with SWAT and stuff, but I think because they were worried about them getting on, I think, losing them and them leaving the country, I think, is why it was done quite quickly. Not to defend it too much, but yeah.
It's exactly the same as the first one, where two people go after an entire gang of mercenaries. It wouldn't happen. I get it, but it wouldn't happen. And then you're having this massive shootout. And don't get me wrong, it was a good scene. It's just bollocks, though, isn't it? If you think it's just bollocks.
It is. But I think, Phil, I mean, when I'm watching films, it's the whole suspension of disbelief. And I will accept a lot. But then sometimes comes a point where my suspension of disbelief is completely ruined. And I come out of the film and start not enjoying it. An example of this film would have been when they go through the office block in the chase. Really good scene. Was it needed? No. Was it a bit silly? I think it was. You know, other than that, it was a really, really good chase. For me, my suspension of disbelief was, for this scene, it was still solid and it was still okay and it didn't really, really bother me. But I know what you mean. From your point of view, it is a difficult one to argue. But I think when you look, because it's happened in 1, 2, and 3 to a certain extent, you will accept it. You know, I mean, yeah, that's why I was happy with it.
What did you think of the fact that enduring all this fight, Mel turns around and says, they think you're on the take. This is when they decide to talk about the fact that he's being investigated by internal affairs.
Yeah, the timing is priceless, isn't it?
It's like, we've got to shoehorn this part of this story in.
You could have done that in one of the final scenes.
That's when he says, his wife is Ebony Clark. And again, it goes back to Lorna reading the books and then reading the excerpts out. I mean, it's the times they mention stuff is the most inconvenient times. I mean, if you had a problem, Neil, with that part, the end of it, when they're on the dock, obviously by this time, Jet Li's brother has been shot, mistakenly, but has been shot by Murtaugh. And they're on this kind of like jetty going out to the sea. And he's just dropped dead. And you've got, they're both talking at each other. They can walk away. They'll come back. They'll get Jet Li another day. He'll have his day because they know how dangerous he is. But you can see that look in Mel Gibson's eyes of, I can't walk away from this one. I've never walked away in my life and I can't again. And I honestly bought into that. I like the fact that they thought, fuck it. Let's just turn around. I know it goes against everything they've said before, where we've got families, we can't afford to do it. But I like the fact they thought, fuck it, one last ride, let's just go for it. I really liked it.
Yeah, I think the way I looked at it, and obviously it wasn't portrayed this way, is that he's so dangerous. He's already burnt his house down and everything else like that. If they had just walked away from him, he knows where they are. He's going to come and try and kill him.
Yeah.
Isn't it? They can't walk away from him.
I didn't think about that. No, they probably can't, can they?
No.
And I thought, you're right. I didn't even think about that, Neil. Nice.
No, I did. That's a very good point.
Because I was thinking kind of like Stu. I love that bit. And it nods back to that scene that I liked. I think neither of you did, where Mel was talking about being really, really, really old and stuff, and it's almost like a nod back to that, saying we're too old for this shit, etc. And I like the fact when the fighting did begin, they basically got their asses kicked. And when it comes to actual fist fights, when it was not quite 1-1, it was really a 2-1, wasn't it?
Yeah.
This is probably one of the best fist fights in the film, in the series. It was just quite brutal, I felt, on like a 1-1 fight.
I like Gary Busey's one in the first one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was good, but the fight that would never happen, but yeah, it was allowed to. Yeah.
Cheered on. Yeah.
Yeah. I like this. Don't get me wrong. It was a great scene. It was really well done. But there's a moment in it where they both tackle him at once and they put him on his ass. And then they decide to do the typical thing in martial arts films where they all attack him at one after the other.
Yeah.
So rather than, oh, that worked, we both had him at the same time. But I know what we'll do is you go, then I'll go. You go, then I go.
It was. But shortly after they started doing that, the director, I think, became quite clever to the point where he would kind of nod, maybe not make it as explicit, but nod to a reason why the other one, it was I take you out, the other one falls over, is trying to get up while the other one attacks. So he did, I think, the shots were such and the edits were such that they were trying not to fall too much into that cliche. It was there, yeah, absolutely. Neil,
it but happened.
They
it
did
happened.
Try, I think.
And then obviously Murtagh gets knocked out, doesn't he? So it is a 1-on-1. And then it very much becomes a Mel film again.
It does, but it's good the fact that during the fight that Riggs is being choked out, that he's going to die, and Murtagh, I think he kind of breaks his own rule, because he's one for the rules, isn't he?
Mm.
That he picks up this metal spike and rams it right through Jet Li, and kind of... A, he murders him. That is his intention. It's completely different to a police shooting.
Yeah.
And Mel Gibson then, obviously, he gets taken out. So Mel Gibson's turn to get up. And he picks him up. And it's funny, because when he drops him in the sea, I expected to see from Lethal Weapon 3 that Patsy Kensit's still dead, chained down then.
Not decayed at all, because she's completely made of plastic.
Fuck it, yeah, Lethal Weapon 3. But... I've not looked on the internet, but they're fighting and he picks up, it looks like an AK-47, and he fires about 10 shots into Jet Li, killing him underwater.
Yeah.
Would that work? Would that, if a gun is underwater like that? I know the AKs are very good guns, which is why everyone buys them, but would that fire underwater like that? And would it have enough jet propulsion to go through him?
That close it would. If it would have fired at all, I don't know. But at that close range, I'm sure it would have done.
There are a few guns. This is where James knocks John Wick. But in John Wick, this guy picks up a gun to shoot John Wick. And because he's underwater and the type of gun it is, it doesn't actually fire and John Wick takes him out. It's because they look at things and they study things, unlike this film. So there you go. But so once he climbs up, he hangs onto this metal... I don't know where this concrete thing comes from, actually, which gives away and he's trapped underwater. And by pure telepathy alone, that he can sense where Murtagh is Riggs is underwater. It's extremely clever, isn't it?
Oh, it's brilliant. I like the fact that when he shoots Jet Li, when he dies, he looks like he's got the facial expression of someone that's stood on Lego.
Or even toys on the stairs.
Yeah, or a paper.
That was the look James had on his face earlier.
It was.
Yeah.
He's just underwater, so he couldn't say fuck. And
but he does rescue him, and it's very, it's all nice and contrived and happy.
It's fucking awful. It really is awful. I'm sorry, but the guy's trapped under fucking reinforced concrete. What feels like about 5 minutes. Now, unless Mel has become some super diver as well as runner, maybe his lungs are really good because the amount of running he does. I don't know. But there's no way on earth that he'd be able to hold his breath for that long whilst trapped under reinforced concrete.
is very, very far fetched.
Well, you say that the average person has approximately can, on average, if they have to, I think about 2 minutes worth. I think the record is about 24 minutes.
24 minutes.
Yeah.
That's those pole divers, isn't it? They're incredible, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, maybe he's a pole diver in his spare time. He doesn't live near the beach, obviously. No, I'll take it back. No, you're right. No.
There you go. I know what you mean. I think, I mean, sometimes maybe you can get so close to someone, such good friends with someone, that you can, you know, like feel their presence, etc. Then they say we only use a certain percentage of our brain. You know, I mean, this could have been a superhero origin story, couldn't it?
So do you think he's turned into Lucy and he's now using?
Yes. Like, having said that,
of his brain.
You did see that, but then he also saw that when he was looking around, there was that shot with him at the end of the jetty where. He did kind of look at the end of the jetty and realise, oh, that's a fair bit of it's missing. And he put two and two together.
I think you're giving it so much credit, honestly. I really do.
I think Lethal Weapon 5, it's going to start in... they're going to be with Professor Xavier.
Mm.
You're having a drink, Jay?
I am having a drink. Was it really loud? I've got to the bottom of my bottle.
I would fucking hate to sit next to you in the cinema. I would smack you in the face, seriously.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Well, I can hear everything you're doing. You must have like the most sensitive microphone in the world.
I know. I need to sort it out. When you
microphone, isn't he?
I probably am doing it.
Unbelievable. But so the next scene is where he's at his wife's grave. He can't. I know his wife passed away, but he can't let her go. He's been through Patsy Kensit. Through Rennie Russo, but he can't let her go. And it's weird, he's asking his dead wife, should he marry Rennie Russo or Lorna Cole, as she is in this film. And then, out of the blue, I don't know why he's being followed, but Leo Getz turns up and tells a story about a dead frog he ran over on a bike, and that he was my only friend, and you guys are my family. It's really weird place to have this story, and that it doesn't
I think, Stu, because yes, when you look at the other three films, absolutely it is really weird. But I think when they made this, they pretty much knew or felt that this would be definitely the last Lethal Weapon film, and I think it helps round everything off with him marrying Rene, finally getting over his wife properly. I don't think, you know, she wasn't alluded much in number three, was she, really? But yeah, and I think it gives Mel Gibson closure, which is why I think it's nice that they put it in.
Oh, he needs that closure. Completely agree. I didn't have a problem with the closure bit because he needed to do that. It's been mentioned so many times through the pen that he gave her or she gave him. So I completely appreciate that. It's just, if you are going to put these into films, then I know they were kind of acting it as they were writing it a lot of the time, but it's just a really poor way of doing it. And when you think you've got someone of Richard Donner's caliber, and to a certain extent, Shane Black, they must have looked back on this and thought, I wish we would have put that part of the story in this film in a different way. They had so many opportunities to do that.
Yeah. It could have been anything, but they choose a frog.
It's just terrible. It really is. And the hospital scene is just padded out. And having a wife who works in the NHS and in maternity as well, when you see people screaming, being abusive to the staff because she wants to get married and telling them, F fucking this and stuff like that, it's just, I don't like it. She wants to get married. So what? Big deal. She wants to get married before a baby. It's nonsense. It really is. Again, it's poor writing. But these good actors are wasted on this poor writing.
And it's the rabbi as well, isn't it? And he doesn't know what he's doing. And it is awful. It is just, you know, the film is suspect anyway. And then they add this to the... I know they're trying to bring it all together, like you said, James, that they're trying to, you know, do all the things to make the characters sit.
Uh-huh.
And you're all happy with it. But this is terrible. I was cringing watching this, and I was hoping it would just end. It was awful.
I wanted the hospital staff to kick her out on the street and serve the baby on the street.
I was hoping the rabbi would just say, fuck off, love, no, go and have your baby.
Yeah. So tell us how much you love this, Jay. Go for it.
I love it, mate. I mean, I love it. I love this film even more now. Even more now. I mean, despite the fact that you clearly diagnosed yourself with misophonia.
Listen, what have you been Googling whilst we've been talking?
What's misophonia, then?
I know. I was trying to mention this to Stu, but he cut in. Misophonia is if noises like chewing or swallowing drive you mad, you may have misophonia.
You know I've had that for years, though, don't you?
I know. That's how I know. My misophonic friend.
Tonight, it really is. It's awful.
Pardon? I think one of my other colleagues had done it. Had it, didn't like chewing and stuff, to the point where I think I ended up, you know, obviously cars now you can Bluetooth stuff.
And I basically
just play people eating on the Bluetooth really loud, to the point where at some point I think he was driving, he stopped the car and walked out because it was a woman eating a gherkin, crunchy gherkin. It was horrible. I didn't like it, but I knew he'd like it less. That's why
you're
I did it.
Sick man.
I wish I could have done that to you, Stu. But no.
Right, Stu. He is a bully.
Yeah.
I know. I really enjoyed the film. For me, 3.5 out of 5. Easy. I thought it was the third best Lethal Weapon. I think Lethal Weapon 3 is the weakest.
Are we there already?
Are we? Blimey, yeah, we are.
Are we? Oh, sorry.
I thought we were you've got something to go.
Oh, apologies. No. I don't. So
they do have the baby.
I thought we were wrapping up. I thought you were asking me what I thought about the film in general.
So they have the babies.
That's why I went on a tirade. 3.5, yeah, giving it away now.
If we're in a rush, then that's fine. But even Rianne comes in, she has a baby. You both see the babies at the end, and then it ends with something like, you've got a friend in me, or something like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, they all have the picture taken together, don't they?
Oh, that was nice.
Story or something.
And I quickly turned it off.
God. So, James, tell me, what's your score? What's your thoughts?
It's 5 stars now.
So, James, out of 10, James, out of 10.
Oh, if it was out of 10, I'd give it 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10, easy.
Okay.
I mean, best bit I thought was all of it. No. The continuing relationship, obviously, between bricks and mortar. was really good. I didn't like, there's a couple of things where the car driving to the office was a bit weird and it kind of ruined what was a really, really, really good chase scene. That's probably my worst bit, because when I looked at that, I was like, oh, that did annoy me. That's the only thing that really annoyed me in this film. Other than that, I thought it was really, really good. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, it's one of those films I quite happily watch every couple of years. There we go, guys. Over to you.
Okay, I'd give this 6 out of 10. And the best bit for me, I like Jet Li in this. I think he's very, very good. I think he makes the film better than it would if he had somewhat other baddies. I mean, I'm so glad Jackie Chan didn't do it. And I'm so glad Eddie Murphy didn't do it. But I think the worst bits for me possibly are just the padded out scenes where there is no payoff whatsoever. I didn't like the scenes with the because they're not used properly. The scene with Murtaugh and Hong, I like the fact they had dialogue, but it was a terrible writing. It wasn't used properly. And I think Murtaugh hasn't been done justice in this film. I don't think he's been done justice in all the films, to be honest. I think he could have done a lot more screen time. But it's just it's a nice way to end it. It's always hard to end a series, isn't it? To end a franchise. Because you've done so well, and when it's so successful, you're really on that tightrope of it's either going to be a brilliant ending or it's going to be shit. That's really what you're left with. And I don't think they did it very well, but I thought it was great films. I think the first one's the best. I think it goes downhill. It's 1, 3, 2, 4 for me. That's the order.
Yeah. I'd give it 4 out of 10.
Oh.
At a push.
Oh.
I wouldn't recommend it to anyone.
Oh my God.
I think they should have stopped at 3, because this was something they've just decided to do 6 years on because they thought they could make some money out of it. It was padded. It was poorly written. And
there's not many good bits in it for me. I think the action scenes were quite good. The continued relationship, like you said, James, with between bricks and mortar. I finished this film and I thought I would be, from the very beginning of it, disappointed. From the opening scene all the way through, I was disappointed with this film, and to me it just didn't feel like it was needed. I was quite happy with the end of three for it to finish there, because we knew Riggs had Lorna, we knew that Danny was obviously okay and he was still with his family and stuff, and I get why they did it. I probably wouldn't, if it was on the telly, I wouldn't stop and watch it.
No.
I'd skip past it. I really wouldn't care if I never saw this film again.
But it has dated, though, hasn't it? I think that struggles with it being dated. If for some reason, the others don't seem to have struggled with that problem.
No.
We've said that on every single one. I think this one, I think due to the humour on it, dates the film a lot. So I think that's where it suffers as well.
Yeah. And I'm only giving it the rating I'm giving it because of the love I have for the two main characters, because of the journey I've been on with them for the last three. And, you know, I've really enjoyed their relationship.
So there's not been any other buddy films, cop buddy films, is there, since this, I can think of? Can you guys?
There's only Rush Hour, isn't there?
No, you got Rush Hour.
Yeah, that's it.
You got the remake with that pretty boy and that guy from Superbad. I forgot. You could argue 22 Jump Street. You could argue they've made it into a buddy cop film, albeit it's a comedy.
And what else have you got? The British one, haven't you?
Sweeney.
God.
Oh no, what was it? The people that did Shaun of the Dead.
Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz. A great buddy cop film.
God,
that's brilliant.
I completely forgot about all of them. Yeah. To compare to these ones, I know it's hard to do a comparison, but if you had to sit and watch a buddy cop trilogy, that, what would you rather? Would you rather Lethal Weapon or Rush Hour?
Lethal Weapon all day.
Yeah, Lethal Weapon.
See, I really like the Rush Hour films.
They are good. They are good. But I prefer these.
I know. It's weird. I think Rush Hour specialises on the comedy, doesn't it?
Mm,
more so definitely. Than what this does. But I just think Rush Hour is so funny. I think Chris Tucker is really, really funny. He annoyed the hell out of me in Fifth Element. But
oh, God, yes. Oh.
Rush Hour is brilliant. I could sit and watch those films again and again, especially when you see the bloopers at the end with Jackie Chan.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just priceless. Okay, so that's the end of the Lethal Weapon. Thanks for the laughter. And we'll be back next week. I won't be back next week. I will be somewhere else. No doubt, whatever scenario it will be made up by James and Neil will be something horrific, but I won't be here next week. The film that we'll be doing, I'll post out on our Twitter and Facebook account when I know what they're doing. I'm really excited to hear them talk about whatever film it will be. We'll be doing The Winter Soldier and The Falcon. And there's just so much more. We've got a back catalogue as well. We've got so many films that we've reviewed that you can catch up. It's a Film Reelcast, Android, and on all good platforms for podcasting. Okay, that's it. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this review. Thank you for listening to the nonsense that we've been speaking about. I am Stuart. I'm done. James, Neil, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
You got the right to remain silent, so shut the fuck up, okay? You got the right to an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we will provide you with the dumbest fucking lawyer on earth. If you get Johnny Cochran, I'll kill you.